Now, what is the criterion here? What makes a sin a major sin and a minor sin a minor one? There are a couple of criteria mentioned here. For example, each sin that is mentioned in the Noble Book of Quran and the narrations as a major one, for sure it is a major sin. Those sins for which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has promised, the fire of the hell, they are major sins. And the other point is that if you repeat a minor sin, then it turns it into a major sin. This is a very important point that many people ignore. So imagine that bad-temperedness, so drinking alcohol is a major sin. So imagine that bad-temperedness is a minor sin. But the fact is that usually the person who is bad-tempered, he repeats that.
Yes.
So he's repeating a minor sin, which makes it a major sin. And the other point is that according to some narrations, if you belittle a sin, a minor sin,
yes,
again, it is turning to a major sin. So yes, we have no right to belittle any sin. And that is why some of the mystics are quoted as saying you cannot call any sin as a minor one.
Sin.
Because at the end of the day, you are disobeying Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala,
yes,
your creator. And the next point is that according to some narrations, if you are enjoying committing a sin, then it's not a minor sin anymore. So some people are happy for the misdeeds that they are doing. So some people, they are suffering from their bad-temperedness,
yes,
but they are happy for that.
Okay.
They think that they are showing a kind of majesty to other people by that bad-temperedness. So if you feel happy about that, again, it is another reason for making that and turning that into a major sin.
That's right.
And the other point is that if you do a sin, a minor sin publicly, again, in some cases, it turns it into a major sin. So you are bad-tempered, but you're doing that, you're showing that publicly. So my point is that those people who are, I don't want to claim that which one is greater than the other.
Yes.
Both of them should be taken seriously because of the narrations. And inshallah, in this session or in the following session, I will share some narrations about both.
That's right.
Both sins, drinking and bad-temperedness, should be taken seriously.
And of course, it's not only limited to these two types.
Of course, yeah.
We can't say minor and major sins. We have, but as we said, you know, I think the Islamic rulings and Islamic laws are very much based on the fitrah of the human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Something which deviates God you from
nature,
the right righteous path and the right truthful path, for sure is, we can say, harmful to your body and soul. And this is what the modern science has also proved, that, for example, drinking wine or alcohol will be harmful for your body too. At the same time, it will have negative effects on your soul,
mm-hmm,
what the modern, for example, sciences call it harmful psychology, you know, on your psyche and on your psychology. But the case is that if you abide by your religious laws as a Muslim, being a good-tempered one to the people, to the fellow men and human beings, on that time you can be a good role model for even the non-Muslims, we can say, who are taking an outer look at the religion of Islam and the religious laws.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that informative point. So having said that, as I mentioned, both sins should be taken seriously.
Yes.
And the narrations are telling us that as Muslims, it's very important for us to be away from drinking and to be away from bad-temperedness.
Yes, yes.
I may share a few of these narrations. First of all, about drinking, the Holy Prophet says that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has cursed the wine and those who prepare and even those who plant a tree for the purpose of preparing the wine. And those who drink, those who sell it, those who buy it, those who carry it, and so on and so forth. Imam Ar-Ridha alayhi salam says that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has not sent any prophet except that he has forbidden the drinking alcohol. The Holy Prophet is quoted as saying, whoever drinks alcohol, the light of faith leaves his heart or her heart.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Imam Ali alayhi salam is quoted as saying, whoever drinks alcohol, his prayers or her prayers are not accepted for 40 days.
Of course,
they need to say the prayer, their prayers, otherwise they have two punishments. But if they say the prayers, their prayers are not accepted.
Okay.
Not only that, the Holy Prophet says that if you believe in God and the Day of Judgment, you cannot sit by the table of in which the wine or the alcohol is served.
That's right.
This shows how major this sin is.
That's right.
To this extent that even if you're not drinking, you're not allowed to sit by next to those people who are drinking.
Okay.
Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is quoted as saying that four groups will not enter paradise. One of them is those who drink alcohol.
That's right.
And let me end this part with this narration from the Prophet that Jum'a al-Sharr kulluhu fi bayt, all the evils are gathered in one house.
That's right.
And the key to that house is drinking alcohol, meaning that if you drink alcohol, then it's possible for you to commit all the other sins and evils.
And how is it possible to drink alcohol and be good-tempered? Because physically and scientifically speaking, when someone drinks, he lost the control of the mind. And just look at how many rapes, misconducts, slaughter of the animals and the people, mass killings, mass shootings are done when the people are unconscious and they are under the, for example, the liquor. Even driving, for example, if you just take a look at the statistics, for example, that how many people have car crashes, they are under the effects of other drugs or liquors, okay? So how a person can act good-temperedly, you know?
This is also another interpretation of this narration, that all the evils are in one house, and the key to that house is drinking, which means that when you are drunk, then you have no control over your deeds.
And according to some of the statistics show that the liver cancer, the main reason for the liver cancer in the Western world is drinking alcohol.
So having said that, let me just share a few narrations about the fact that bad-temperedness is also one of the big sins that we need to be away from.
Yes.
The story of Sa'd ibn Mu'adh is very famous. He was one of the greatest companions of the Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family, to the extent that when he passed away, the Holy Prophet showed some signs that were unprecedented, and the companions of the Prophet were surprised how the Holy Prophet is showing his kindness and mercy towards Sa'd ibn Mu'adh. And the Holy Prophet referred to the number of the angels taking part in his funerals. The Holy Prophet, he himself took some role in burying the body of Sa'd.
Yes.
And having seen that, the mother of Sa'd says that she gave the glad tidings of paradise to her son. And that was very normal. I mean, when you see the situation, the angels, the prophet, that's very logical conclusion. But the Holy Prophet said that, wait, now he is suffering from the pressure of the grave because of the fact that he was bad-tempered regarding his family members. Now, this is the importance of su'ul khulq and husnul khulq, bad-temperedness and good-temperedness. You might be as great as Sa'd ibn Mu'adh, but if you are bad-tempered, at least you will have a kind of punishment in your grave. And there are many narrations in this regard. I may just share one narration. The Holy Prophet is quoted as saying, he was asked which one of the faithful is the most virtuous, and the Holy Prophet said, the one who is best in terms of the mannerism and good-temperedness.
That's all right. Thank you very much. And the superficial look at the Western world, I think, is the weak point that some of the Muslims and the believing inside the religion of Islam might have. Just how beautiful and good is the surface of the liberal capital world in the Western world? No, there are so many deep, deep problems. And these are according to their own statistics. For example, the abortions, we can't say child sex, underage sexual assaults, mass shooting, car crashes, you know, liver cancer, this and that. And this is according to the statistics. As you said, the main problem might be, we can say, domestic violence and liquor use. And these two important factors have role in changing society into a maltreated one. Okay, thank you much, Sheikh, for a nice elaboration. It was very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/en/call of Islam page to another episode. God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
British police have found themselves embroiled in another racism scandal, this time surrounding the killing of an unarmed black man in South London by armed officers on the 5th of September. Following an alleged police pursuit, 24-year-old Chris Carver was behind the wheel of a car hemmed in by two police vehicles in a narrow street before one round was fired, ending his life. He leaves behind a fiancée and an unborn child. No gun was found in the car.
Thousands of protesters have descended outside police headquarters in central London to vent their fury over what they say is gross injustice being carried out by the authorities against Chris and his family. Accusations are swirling around, some of which include that the police who stopped Chris on that fateful day may have known who was inside the car in the lead up to the fatal shooting. This is, of course, all being investigated, but the protest organizers have made absolutely clear that they are going to refuse to back down until the demands of the family are met and justice be served.
Fighting back the tears, family members spoke of their ordeal after seeing the body for the first time since the killing. News of the shooting has caused uproar, especially in the black community. They feel this was just another example of a racist system out to harm them. Following the backlash, the officer responsible for the shooting has been suspended. An investigation is also underway, but the police watchdog warned it could take 9 months to reach a conclusion. The family expressed anger at the lengthy wait. However, the question of race playing a role will be examined as a factor, providing some small hope that the family's demands will be answered. Robert Carter, London.
Palestinian protesters took to the streets in the blockaded Gaza Strip following the Friday prayers to condemn Israeli raids on Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied city of Al-Quds. Angry protesters shouted slogans against the Israeli regime, vowing to sacrifice their lives for the sake of Al-Aqsa Mosque. The protest comes following the desecration of the mosque by Israeli settlers backed by Israeli forces. The mosque is the third holiest site in Islam. Hamas resistance movement has warned the Israeli regime against violating the sanctity of Al-Quds.
Al-Aqsa Mosque is a red line that mustn't be crossed. We hold the Zionist entity fully responsible for any attack in Al-Quds. The enemy will only open the gates of hell on itself. The continuation of attacks on the sanctity of Al-Quds will backfire on the Zionist entity and its settlers.
Israeli settlers regularly storm Al-Aqsa Mosque, a provocative move that infuriates Palestinians. The attacks and desecration of the mosque compound increased during Jewish holidays.
We salute our people in Al-Quds, and we say to them that Palestinian resistance factions in Gaza will not remain silent amid Israeli attacks on Al-Quds. We also call on all Palestinians and Muslims to mobilize to confront Israel's conspiracies against Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Palestinians have raised the alarm over Tel Aviv's plots to divide Al-Aqsa Mosque into Jewish and Muslim sections or sitting times for visits.
The Zionists have no right to be in Al-Aqsa Mosque because it's purely for Muslims since ancient times. They are trying to control Al-Aqsa Mosque, but all their attempts will be in vain.
Protesters in the Gaza Strip vowed to step up their support for Al-Quds until the end of all the Israeli violations in the Holy City. Observers say the world has failed to help Palestinians in Al-Quds while turning a blind eye to Israeli violations against the oppressed people of Palestine for decades. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Iranians across the country have commemorated Arba'in, the 40th day after the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein. People in the capital, Tehran, marked the occasion, too, by walking southward to the town of Frey. That was a symbolic walk by those who could not take part in the Arba'in march held in Iraq, where pilgrims from across the world marched toward the city of Karbala, which houses the holy shrine of Imam Hussein.
I'm so sad that I couldn't visit the holy shrine of Imam Hussein this year, but I took part in this walk in Tehran to play my part in preserving the legacy of Imam Hussein.
This is a march for all of the freedom seekers, no matter what their religion is. Imam Hussein sacrificed his life 14 centuries ago to save our religion, so this could be a lesson for all people to uphold righteousness, even if it comes at the cost of their lives.
Imam Hussein is the third Shia Imam and the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. The Shia Imam and his companions were killed by the tyrant of their time, Yazid, during the Battle of Karbala some 14 centuries ago. Every year, on the occasion of Arba'in, millions of pilgrims from different countries travel on foot to get to Imam Hussein's shrine. The march is meant to sympathize with the Imam on the pains he endured during the Battle of Karbala.
To us Muslims, participating in the Arba'in march in Karbala is more than a religious duty, but a passion for preserving Imam Hussein's ideology and promoting it among the new generation.
Imam Hussein and his companions were martyred after they refused to pay allegiance to Yazid, for they believed he did not practice Islam, as taught by the Prophet Muhammad.
As Imam Hussein said, he rose against Yazid to revive true Islam as introduced by the Prophet Muhammad, who was Imam Hussein's grandfather. By his refusal to pay allegiance to Yazid, our Imam exposed the fact that Yazid was not treading the path of Islam.
This year, from Iran alone, some 3.5 million people took part in the Arba'in walk in Iraq, in a show of respect for Imam Hussein, who is known among Muslims as a symbol of resistance against tyranny.
To Muslims, the Arba'in walk is of key importance. These people couldn't make it to Karbala this year, but they felt bound to take part in this symbolic march, for they believe by doing this, they would help preserve the legacy of Imam Hussein. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Like the other parts of the Muslim world, Pakistan Shia Muslims observe Arba'in with traditional reverence and solemnity. Thousands of mourners march in streets of Pakistan to pay tribute to Imam Hussein, the grandson of Holy Prophet Muhammad, who embraced martyrdom in Karbala in southern Iraq some 1400 years ago. The battle was fought between the faithful followers of the third Shia Imam, Hussein bin Ali, and Yazidi forces on the plains outside the modern Iraqi city of Karbala, which is home to Imam's Shrine, a sacred sanctuary for Shia Muslims.
We believe the legacy of Imam Hussein is a timeless source of lessons about humanity and loyalty that exceeded his time and place. The love for Imam is endless and will continue until the end of this world.
The Islamic New Year, started from the month of Muharram, has been observed all over Pakistan with great dedication. Muharram is the month of mourning for the lovers and faithful followers of Imam Hussein.
We're here to pay tribute to Imam Hussein, his family and his companions who sacrificed their lives to save Islam. The mission of Imam Hussein is the mission of truth, peace and justice.
Similar mourning processions and religious gatherings were held in all major cities and towns all across Pakistan with special security arrangements.
The mourners and religious scholars have highlighted the teachings of Imam Hussein and his uprising against Yazid in Karbala. They regard the tragedy of Karbala as the symbol of resistance against oppressors. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Muslims in Nigeria are also marking Arba'een with a symbolic trek over a long distance. Danjuma Abdullahi reports.
Hundreds of Shia Muslims took to the roads, trekking and chanting to mark 40 days since the anniversary of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and scores of members of his family and his companions in Karbala in present-day Iraq. The trekkers condemned Yazid and his army for the gruesome killing of the third Shia Imam.
We commemorate this Arba'een in order to show our love and tribute to Imam Hussein and his household and his right companions that sacrificed their life entirely in order to save Islam.
Men, women and children joined millions of other Shia Muslims to participate in the symbolic trek, which was organized by Nigeria's Islamic movement. The trek is held around the globe every year as part of mourning rituals for Imam Hussein. They praise the leadership qualities of Imam Hussein.
He's a leader of justice and humanity. He brought justice and humanity in the world entirely. Why? During the Battle of Karbala, he stand before the oppressors and told them that he stand here not because of his priority, not because of everything, rather to bring justice.
Despite the heavy rain, the marchers trekked for several kilometers and ended their walk here in Suleja.
Prayers were offered here for Imam Hussein, members of his household and his loyal companions who were martyred at the Battle of Karbala. Danjuma Abdullahi, Suleja.
Every year, millions of pilgrims from all over the world take part in the Arba'een March in Iraq, walking the distance between the holy cities of Najaf and Karbala. In this religious gathering, pilgrims commemorate the third Shia Imam, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, who is a symbol of love and sacrifice. Hussein and his 72 companions were martyred in the Battle of Karbala in southern Iraq in the 7th century after fighting chivalrously for justice and resisting succumbing to the tyrant of his era. The modern example of Imam Hussein's resilience against oppression is Palestine. On the way of the pilgrims marching to Holy Karbala, a monument incarnating Al-Aqsa Mosque grabs pilgrims' attention. There is a convoy named the Al-Aqsa Corps, which receives thousands of pilgrims from various countries during Arba'een. Al-Aqsa Corps convoy forges a direct link between the oppression inflicted upon Imam Hussein and the one suffered by the Palestinian people in the face of the Zionist regime.
Undoubtedly, the issue of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, and his oppression is similar to the current oppression against the Palestinian nation. This nation is facing organized terrorism, which is led and carried out by Israel, the fundamental enemy of Islam and Muslims. Therefore, we say the plight of Palestinians is very similar to the story of Karbala. If you want to rise to the aid of the Palestinian cause, we must rise from the origins of the movement of Imam Hussein.
What's happening in Palestine today refreshes the memories of what took place around 1400 years ago. The oppression Palestinians are suffering at the hands of Israeli occupying forces is today's version of Imam Hussein's resistance against the second Umayyad caliph, Yazid.
Palestinian people, since a century, are facing a war from the imperialism and Zionism, ethnic cleansing, killing women, children, massacres, many massacres were made in Palestine, in Palestinian villages, and prisoners. 1 million Palestinians went to prison since in the past 30 years. 1 million. So Palestine today is Karbala of today, of this time.
Within the big tent that belongs to Palestinians is an exhibition that displays photos of Palestinian martyrs killed by Israeli forces. This, alongside other organized activities, has attracted the attention of younger generations.
As our leader Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei says, the liberation of Quds will begin from Palestine with God's help. God willing, nothing can hinder us, Iraqis and the Arab and Muslim community in general. We gather around the axis of Hussein, peace being upon him. Today in the Arba'een Walk and in this mawqif, it was shown that Hussein's saga is being honored by our Palestinian brothers. This is a clear reason that depicts the universal aspects of Imam Hussein, showing that he is not specific to a particular sect or religion or group. He's for everyone.
One of the lessons learned from Imam Hussein's revolution is that death with dignity is better than a life with humiliation. And the resistance demonstrated by the brave Palestinian nation in the face of Israeli crimes and oppression is actually similar to that.
Every year during Arba'een, we are reminded that the lovers of justice and liberation from oppression are in the majority. And this mawqif is trying to educate people about the atrocities against the Palestinian people and to teach especially the younger generation what the Palestinian cause is. Mahdi Abbasian, Karbala.
Miles covered on foot. Mourners walked from their homes all the way to the city center in Karachi to join the main procession to show their love for Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam.
Mourners have gathered here to commemorate the 40th day after the anniversary of Imam Hussein's martyrdom and to show their respect for a man who sacrificed his life but did not pledge allegiance to the tyrant of his time, Yazid.
The mourners chanted, "Stand like Hussein against Yazid of your time."
People, you are looking there. There are a large amount of people here. People love Imam Hussein. This is the day which the family of Imam Hussein came from Sham to Karbala.
It's a lesson for many because his sacrifices for Islam and what he has done is something we should remember for all of our lives.
Abu Abdullah sacrificed for the Islam, for the people of Islam, for the people of world, for the peace, for the humanity, for the justice.
The mourners recited elegies to remember the hardships of Prophet's grandson and the tragedy of Karbala and protest against tyrants of the time.
We are here to tell the oppressors that we are not a minority, we are a majority here, and we always prove them wrong every year in Arba'een, every year at this day we prove them wrong that we are a minority. We are the biggest majority in the world and we will stay the biggest majority.
Imam Hussein alayhi salam sacrificed his life and his family for this save the Islam, the message of Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and become the voice of the voiceless people of humanity.
It is still relevant because it was such a great sacrifice on his part, because he sacrificed his family, his children, for the sake of our religion, for the sake of Allah. So for that reason, it is really relevant to us.
Those who participated in the mourning ceremonies say they are inspired by Imam Hussein's philosophy of freedom. His devotees and diehard followers believe his legacy will remain a ray of hope for ages to come. Until then, millions across the globe will keep flocking Karbala to refresh their allegiance with their Imam. Mohammad Turi, Karachi.
People across Afghanistan are commemorating the 40th day after the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, known as Arba'in. People gather in mosques on this day and hold mourning ceremonies to pledge their loyalty to Imam Hussein and remember his legacy, which is resistance against arrogance and oppression.
Mourning gatherings in mosques and other places is not merely an emotional act, but it is a mixture of human values. People gather to raise their awareness and passion for righteousness, which is also the legacy of Imam Hussein.
On Arba'in, the poor, as well as those who attend the mourning ceremonies, are fed for free. The march has now decreased due to the Taliban's new security measures to prevent attacks on mourners by extremist groups. The love for Imam Hussein, however, is growing day by day.
Not only the threats cannot affect such gatherings in a negative way, but oppositely, the enthusiasm for holding such events is growing day by day. Security threats cannot prevent such holdings.
Imam Hussein's movement does not belong to Muslims, but to all humanity. The lesson he taught is also for humanity. He taught all of us not to give in to arrogance.
Imam Hussein and his companions were martyred nearly 1400 years ago after they refused to pay allegiance to Yazid, the tyrant of the time. Those who participate in Arba'in ceremonies believe that marking the day would help preserve the legacy of Imam Hussein, who sacrificed everything for the sake of Islam.
People in Afghanistan, like the rest of Shia Muslims, mark Arba'in by doing religious activities to pledge their allegiance to Imam Hussein. They say they would not follow the arrogant, as did not Imam Hussein. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
After more than a year has passed since U.S. President Joe Biden took office, the reality we're witnessing is the continuation of former U.S. President Donald Trump's most aggressive immigration policies towards immigrants. The Biden administration not only cannot fulfill its promises that it has given to immigrants, but also insists on racist, xenophobic and repressive views against immigration. The treatment of illegal immigrants in US violates human rights in many cases, and a number of those who enter this country through the Mexican border and are victims of physical and mental abuse is not small. For example, the U.S. Republican Party, by abusing the immigrants and transferring them to the regions under the leadership of Democrats, is trying to take political advantage of this measure and put more pressure on the Biden administration. We have taken a look at some of the world media and press's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Reuters news agency has written, some migrants who were flown to the island of Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts said on Thursday, 15th of September, they were duped about their destination, and Democratic leaders called for a probe of the move by Florida's Republican governor to send them there from Texas. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who's up for re-election this November and seen as a possible presidential contender in 2024, took credit for the two flights, which originated in San Antonio, Texas, and stopped in Florida on their way to Martha's Vineyard. The White House and residents of the vacation enclave called it a political stunt, as Ron DeSantis joins Republican governors from Texas and Arizona in sending migrants north. The governors have sought to highlight the two parties' differences on immigration policy and shift the burden of caring for immigrants to Democratic areas. For months, Texas and Arizona have sent busloads of migrants to the Democratic-run cities of New York, Chicago, and Washington. A Martha's Vineyard airport official said the two flights on Wednesday, 14th of September, carried about 50 migrants, mostly from Venezuela. Hours after the planes landed, two buses sent by Texas Governor Greg Abbott, another Republican facing re-election this November, dropped off migrants in a Washington neighborhood, not far from Vice President Kamala Harris's official residence on Thursday, 15th of September. One Venezuelan migrant who arrived at Martha's Vineyard identified himself as Luis, a 27-year-old, and said he and nine relatives were promised a flight to Massachusetts, along with shelter, support for 90 days, help with work permits, and English lessons. He said they were surprised when their flight landed on Martha's Vineyard. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said Republican governors were using migrants as political pawns. Several Democrats, including Charlie Crist, Ron DeSantis' opponent in Florida, and California Governor Gavin Newsom, have called on federal authorities to investigate the matter. Britain's Guardian newspaper explains more about this story. Attorneys representing Venezuelan asylum seekers flown thousands of miles to an affluent holiday island in Massachusetts at the behest of Republican governors have formally requested authorities open a criminal investigation, claiming the victims were induced to board airplanes and cross state lines under false pretenses. Lawyers for Civil Rights, a Boston-based group representing 30 of the 48 people flown from Texas to Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts on Wednesday, 14th of September, said individuals working in concert with state officials, including the Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, made numerous false promises to the migrants, including of work opportunities, schooling for their children, and immigration assistance, in order to induce them to travel. According to Lawyers for Civil Rights, which is providing pro bono legal assistance to the asylum seekers, the Venezuelans were duped in what was essentially a coordinated political stunt targeting vulnerable people based on their race and country of origin. Those flown to the holiday island of Martha's Vineyard included women and children as young as 2 years old. Lawyers for Civil Rights has written to the U.S. Attorney Rachel Rollins and the Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey, requesting they open a criminal investigation, as we strongly believe that criminal laws were broken by the perpetrators of this stunt. In a statement, Lawyers for Civil Rights said, "This cowardly political stunt has placed our clients in peril. Upon arrival, numerous individuals had to be rushed to hospital in need of medical care. Some now have immigration hearings as early as Wednesday, 21st of September, thousands of miles away." The story has also been covered by Al Jazeera's website from a different angle. Massachusetts state officials announced migrants were flown to the U.S. island of Martha's Vineyard recently in what critics have denounced as a cruel political stunt by Republican lawmakers are being moved to a military base. Approximately 50 migrants, including about half a dozen children, boarded buses on Friday, 16th of September, to head to the ferry to Cape Cod, where Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker said they would be housed temporarily at Joint Base Cape Cod. The group was flown to Martha's Vineyard without warning on Wednesday night, 14th of September, as part of an escalating effort by Republican governors to call attention to what they view as U.S. President Joe Biden's failure to secure the U.S.-Mexico border amid record attempted crossings. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has taken credit for transporting the migrants from Texas to Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts, though the legal basis for the Florida government to round up migrants in a different state remained unclear. The migrants said they had recently been admitted into the United States on a fast-track permit known as humanitarian parole after leaving Venezuela and had been staying at a shelter in San Antonio, Texas. Rachel Self, a Boston immigration lawyer who gave legal assistance to some of the migrants, said they had been lured onto planes under false pretenses.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islam my deen.
Islam my deen.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. السلام علیکم و رحمت الله و برکاته.
و علیکم السلام.
This is Vita at your service.
Very happy to meet you here, Vita.
A nice pleasure.
This is Youth Station. We're having another episode.
Yeah, it is IRIB English Radio, and
yes,
we are at your service.
Have you ever dreamed of changing the world?
You know, I have a rule in my life. Be the change I want to see in the world. This is a common sentence that you will see in every biography, in social media.
Yeah, exactly.
Be the change you want to see in the world.
Exactly.
But no one will do that way. As you know, for example, we have a youth generation and we have elderly generation. In the youth generation, because of the passionate persona that they have and they grow in themselves, it's like, okay, I believe in myself. I think I'm perfect. And when you think you're perfect, you have kind of extra trust in yourself.
Extra
and you think
energy.
You can do, yeah, exactly. You can do anything. and even change the world. I don't say it's a bad thing at all, but,
I think it's a hallucination.
Possible. Yeah, exactly. And it's because you're a young person.
Yeah.
If you grow older and you just taste the bitter parts of the life, you will understand that, okay, I would change myself and that's enough for me, for
exactly.
the whole life and for everyone.
Yeah.
And this is the point, that when people grow older because of the bitter experiences that they had in their lives, for example, losing someone, I don't know, anything that make them sad, they're like, okay, I can't do anything about this situation, about this world, and this is like a flow which is impossible to go against it. So
yeah.
I'm trying to act like a normal person, and I will live my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes on.
I guess it has a lot to do with your age.
Yeah.
When you're younger, you think, oh my God, I have the power to change the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
I could cross the boundaries. I could do this and that and blah, 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 blah. But when you get older, but now everybody might think that we are aged.
Yeah. No.
We are old. We are just, we are wrinkled. We have too much of wrinkles in our face. But this is Youth Station.
Yeah.
We should not forget that we're talking about the youth. And, okay, as a youth, I have to admit that, you know, I sometimes think that the age that you think you are, and it has been written in your identity card, is not going to be your real age.
Exactly.
Because sometimes you're 18, but you
are 38.
Yes.
Intellectually.
Exactly, intellectually. So I have to admit that when I was younger, I had so much of passions to do so many things.
For changing the world, you mean?
No. I'm not the kind of person who dreams that big.
You know.
But as I just got older, I think I turned into a much more lazy person that cannot even change herself,
exactly.
much less the entire world and universe.
You know, the thing is, when you are young, you just don't accept your defects. You don't expect you're weak. I want to prove to the world that you are powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You have the strength to change anything.
And then life happens.
Yeah.
And then life comes in the middle.
What a beautiful sentence. Life happens, you know.
Yeah, life
because
happens.
Because we leave most of the time, but life that much doesn't happen to
exactly.
us.
Exactly.
Especially in young ages, in a young generation. We cannot taste life. There are many factors that I don't want to talk about them because our story is another story. But the thing is, I think if you want to be the change, really, and if you are somehow serious about this goal, you have to have a combination of the youth generation and elderly generation. It's like, okay, you have to first of all admit whatever you are. You have to understand that you have some defects, you have some weaknesses, and you have to do something for them. You have to change them. Let me give you an example. For example, you are a bad-tempered
person. So just let's
person.
Make it clear, Bita.
Mm-hmm.
We're coming to the point that we admit that instead of changing the world, we have to start changing ourselves. Yeah. To start I remember that I heard a quote which was very beautiful. Be the change that you wish the world would bring to you. So this is exactly the point that we have to consider. But before we talk about it more and more, let's go for a short break. We'll have a sip of water.
And after
we'll breathe and then we'll be back.
We're going to come back to our conversation.
So this is just the cliffhanger. Don't go anywhere.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back to Youth Station. Here with Bita, we're talking about
a hot topic about something which is really important. And I think most of you guys just think about this point, changing the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all once have been entangled in this thought that maybe we're going to change the world, but...
Yeah. I wanted to give an example, if it's a cliffhanger, if you remember it. You know, the thing is, for example, you are a bad-tempered person.
Mm-hmm.
You're someone just get irritated easily and something like that.
Yeah.
And you want all of the people around the world to be good tempered, to be kind, to be nice, to be something, you are not that person. And even if, for example, all the people around the world were good, and but they just wanted to react your actions, they would act like bad tempered because you are bad tempered. You know, you cannot expect others to be someone else that you are not. You cannot be even you don't try to be.
Yeah, exactly. That's very true. So the wise men usually start from themselves. We said it in previous part. And when they start from themselves, they would go through too much of hardships, you know. We say that Rome has not been built over one night. So it is not just like you are going to turn into a miraculously you're going to turn into an angel just after one night of talking to yourself, of having sort of a soliloquy with yourself. It's not going to happen that way. It's going to take a lot from your soul, you know?
Yeah.
You have to go and search too much. You have to know yourself. You have to start to recognize what are the problems that you're suffering from. So then little by little, you're going to work on them. Just step by step, as though you are curing yourself, you know? When I was younger, I had this dream that maybe I could be able to make a cure for all the sicknesses all around the world.
Nice one. This is one
but,
of my goals.
But, you know, it's something that would never happen because, you know, we all need a reason to die. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
After all, these sicknesses, these problems, catastrophes,
because
all
they're
happen.
Supposed to.
Exactly.
Happen.
They're supposed to happen. And these, you know, we are just like sailors in a big ocean. So it is very much unlogical to expect this ocean to be always calm, to be always
the way you
on the
want
safe
it to
side.
Be.
Yeah, the way you want it to be.
You just told something that caught my attention. You told that I have to know myself. You know, the thing is, if you ask me what I'm going to do to change the world, to change the people, or change anything, I'm not going to tell you that first of all, I'm going to change myself at all. I'm not going to change myself because I believe in
because
myself.
Because I don't need change.
Yeah,
I'm good the way I am.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but the thing is, I want to know myself. You know, for example, when you reach to something, when you reach, for example, I don't know, money, power, authenticity, and something like that, it's not that they will change you. They will make you reveal yourself. You know what? For example, even in our religion, even in our Islamic history, we have the event of Ashura, which was a big change to the world, not only to Islamic, you know, not only to Islamic nations, but also to the world. It was something really exceptional. Why? Why do you think it was a big change that changed the whole history of Islam, of human being, of the relation of God and human? Why? What is your opinion about this?
Well, I would say that Imam Hussein alayhi salam started this journey. He wanted to make everything more clear for human beings.
Exactly.
He wanted us to come to a closer definition of the truth.
Of the truth. Of the truth of, you know, our religion even. Our fitrat, our, you know, our true self.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think the most important part of this event was that all the people revealed themselves. You know, they just knew that deep in their heart, for example, most of the people didn't support Imam Hussein because they weren't actually believing in what they were saying.
Because, you know, sometimes saying, actually most of the times, saying is pretty much easier than acting.
Than doing, yeah. I do agree with that one. But the thing I'm trying to tell you is that changing the world is not something that you cannot reach. It's something achievable. It's something that you can have in your own hands. Because we have many people, no matter what age they are or something, they just change the world. But the thing is, first of all, you have to know yourself. You have to know your goals. And you have to know the true situation. If you don't know where you are, if you don't know whether you are the supporter of bad things or good things or evil or angel, you cannot just change anything.
Thank you.
I usually say to everyone that when they start nagging about the economical condition or the different problems and dilemmas that we have in social system.
Of even of cultural
Yeah, but matters. For different sort of things. Okay. I always say that, okay, try to correct your problems and then expect other people to change themselves. Whatever you expect the society to be like, you have to start it from yourself. You see, there is a larger scale and there is this a smaller scale.
Exactly.
There is this part that belongs to a larger society. That small ingredient would make many changes if it starts to change itself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean that as a single person, I have this responsibility to change myself and then expect the entire world to change. So if I have this dream that, okay, I would love to change the world, start it from yourself. If you think that you would love the other people to be kind, then start it from yourself. Try to practice kindness yourself. If you wish to be, I don't know, a scholar person, then start reading, start going through too much of research in order to be one.
But the thing is, the fear of starting something always makes us to finish this. You know, for example, your dream is to change the world, and you know, you accept that you have to change yourself first. But the fear of the first step that you have to go through,
overcoming yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Of overcoming yourself in this road will stop you.
Yeah, exactly.
In a way. But at last, I want to tell you that I'm from youth generation, and I don't want to be like Kelly Sher or something, but the thing is, I'd like to be a change in the world. I want to change something. I want to be someone, you know?
Okay, everyone would love that, but you have to do a lot of hard work.
Exactly. I just accept it, and I wish I can do that.
Yes,
and
I know you can do that.
I don't want this mindset, which, for example, elderly people that you have to start from a little thing or something like that. Stop me.
And just to wrap it up, I would say that there was a beautiful poem I remember once I read when I was so young.
Oh my gosh.
It was very beautiful. It said that at the end of the life, we're not going to be judged by the amount of money we've made, by the number of houses we've achieved, by the number of whatever goodness that we have achieved, but we're going to be judged with our hearts.
Nice.
That's the same thing that would happen in the day of judgment. So God is not going to ask us about the amount of money we have made or the amount of cars we've bought or whatever that is materialistic. He would rather ask us about our heart. It is our heart that is going to be judged. The amount of kindness you shared with other people, the amount of happiness you've brought to other hearts, and so on and so forth.
And you have to think big. You have to dream big.
Yeah.
And you have to
think outside the box, but do not go too far because it's going to change into a hallucination and then it's not going to be real.
You'll be like depressed. Okay, I'm not going to
Yeah, exactly.
That.
Depression is another side effect of thinking too big. So, again, moderation would do wonders. Thank you for listening. This was all the time we had for today's episode.
I hope you enjoyed and be the change you want to see in the world.
Exactly.
I tell you, farewell.
Farewell and
assalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio.